what I'm going to be presenting to you actually evolves out of about 15 years of trying to find out what is actually happening in well visits, which are, of course, what happens after you have the baby, and seeing the persistent gaps and trying to come up with some ways to both continue to characterize whether we're doing what we say we're up to in well childcare, which is so critical, and more research points to the importance of early life, but also to engage parents in the process of even knowing why they're going in and being partners in improving care. So we've been up to, for about 6 years, developing a methodology. The first time we wrote a grant to do what I'm going to present to you was in 1998. So the world, it took a long, about 10 years to get funded a project to actually create a tool that parents could use before visits to find out what they were going in for and what their priorities were, and to align that with Bright Futures. And so we've done the study, and I could spend all the time just talking about the development and the study and the outcomes, which I'll tell you briefly about. But mostly what I'm going to talk about is, what do you do when you've developed something that people actually like to use and you want to get it into the world out of IRB? And you want to actually make it work in the world. And really, we need to be addressing this big time, because the tools are emerging quickly. But I don't know of anyone who's actually gotten it out of a research context and into the world. And that's what we're trying to do, because we feel compelled to, because it seems to be something that might have some benefit. So I'm going to be talking about our Well Visit Planner tool and lessons for translating this into practice. And I'm presenting on behalf of a very large group of collaborators. The ones I will point out to you today are Judy Shaw, who's one of the key authors of Bright Futures, Jonathan Modest, who's here in Boston, who's a key partner in our beta test, getting this tool used in a large practice, large set of practices, as well as many of my colleagues and my longest time mentor, Edward Shore, in this field, for those of you who are familiar with it. Okay, so I have nothing to disclose. I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about that either. I already said it. Okay, so patients are the most underused resource for quality improvement. Who said that? Don Berwick, your own Don Berwick. No, probably none of you are from Boston, but I'm in Boston. So. But you know, think about it. There are 126 medical schools that teach you how to be a doctor, but nobody talks about what it means to be a patient, what your roles, responsibilities are, that you really should probably know something about what you're going in for and what your role can be. And we need to make it really super easy for people to do that. So we created the Well Visit Planner, which is actually available now to the public in wellvisitplanner.org. It goes up to age 3. It'll be going up to age 6 soon, and it'll be in English and Spanish soon. So parents come here, and they basically do pre-visit planning. But before I tell you what it actually does, I'm going to just point out the theoretical foundations are that there's a lot of studies in health psychology and in journals that we don't necessarily all read, but hopefully will be more as we focus more on health behaviors and improving care and engagement, that talk about the mutual participation and elaboration likelihood models of health communication, that when we actually engage in active two-way partnership, coupled with assessment-based approaches, there's quite a bit of literature on the importance of assessment as a way to create the conversation. So those assessment tools that irritate all of us actually are the vehicle for creating the context for dialogue. So they don't just give information, they create relationship as well. They're done right. And to promote the likelihood of salient and effective communication. So 90% of seems healthcare is getting people to do what they need to do for themselves, and it's communication dependent. Even though we have ICD-9 and CPT codes, if we don't do the communication part right, it often doesn't go well. And yet we don't focus really on what does that mean and what does that look like and how do we facilitate that. So the Well Visit Planner, parents come to the site and they fill out, they do 3 steps. They answer a few questions, starting with what do you like about being a parent? What are some things you're excited about your child? And then, of course, the family risks and changes, and also some developmental surveillance items, and so on and so forth. There's 8 versions for 4 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 month, 15 month, 18, you know how it goes, okay? And there's going to be even more. Then they pick their priorities according to the Bright Futures guidelines. There's a big, thick book, maybe 40 things you could talk about. The goal is to have parents' priorities met. Doctors often, you know that they're not meeting their parents' priorities, that they're doing what they call gunshot well child care. If I throw enough at them, maybe something will stick. I read the tea leaves. But this basically says these are the 3 to 5 things I want to talk about. Parents can pick up to 5 things. The average number of priorities parents picked was 3, so they weren't swamping the system, which was a big fear of the providers, as parents were going to pick 25 things and I wouldn't be able to address it. That did not happen. So our study was really to find out, you know, whether how it would go. And then they get a visit guide. Parents get a visit guide that clarifies what they said back to them that helps them be a partner. And that visit guide then goes into the electronic record in 2 ways. One is through Securi faxing or through the actual into the actual data fields, which is how we originally tested it. And when you don't have EHR integration because that's too much, the parents can secure email it to their provider if you can set it up that way. So it doesn't necessarily have to be as complicated depending on how you do it. And we've also done it in clinics on kiosks so that parents are doing it right when they come in. So there's a number of ways we've been doing this. So the engagement process for the practices is to communicate about this, send parents to the website, they get a customized guide, and then the encounter is enhanced. That's the model. The office flow is very important. We found that the office flow actually improved by as a result of trying to put patient engagement into the office flow. This was the offices we worked with were thought they were engaging patients until one of the more resistant providers said, when my mom came in and said she didn't fill it out for the 9-month visit because she already did it for the 6-month visit, I knew that I was not engaging parents because she didn't realize that every visit's different, that there's a lot of things that happen between 6 and 9 months, and we weren't telling people what was going on. And so even in those visits. So this is a flow, and just to say that we have how it works, what the role of the front desk is, and the nurses, MAs, and providers. And I'm not talking a lot about this, but this is just a visual. And more visuals for you. This is what the cover sheet looks like for our, which is a huge achievement, by the way, to secure eFax from a centralized website to a provider EMR, how to do that. So this is what they see, and then the visit guide follows. And this is what some of the full EHR integration fields look like, where we really highlight always when it's parent report. And the providers do say that they go to bed sleeping better at night knowing they met their parents' needs, even if they didn't do everything. So we have additional tools, which are paper pencil forms of the Well Visit Planner, a provider-focused visit guide, and also an educational website that parents can learn before the visits about the topics and sometimes therefore not be need to talk about them, also downloading materials. So in the research, we were looking at feasibility, acceptability, implementation, impact on quality. This was done through a maternal and child health grant based on Bright Futures. If it's not in Bright Futures, I can't put it in, but that's why the translation is so key, because it's changing all the time, the guidelines, so we have to be somewhere to make sure that gets translated into this, and had a lot of expert and parent engagement. And in terms of the impact, 92% of the parents said they would recommend it to a friend. Many of them wanted to send it to their friends while they were in the study. And we were recognized in a Health 2.0 competition, which was, I think, kind of a good sign, I hope. We had a doubling of psychosocial screening without even trying. We really weren't trying to necessarily improve quality per se. We were just trying to figure out if this wouldn't blow up the visit, people would find it acceptable, feasible. But immediately it opened up the psychosocial screening dialogue. Providers often were saying, well, I don't bring it up because I'm not sure. And parents are like, I don't bring it up because I'm not sure. It just opened the whole field up. And then the providers are like, what do I do? It's like, that's the right question to be asking. You know, where do I send my parents for stress management? A lot of it had to do with non-diagnostic, sub-diagnostic identification of issues where people just need more support in order for it not to have to go all the way to the point of being something that then requires more. So the key issues, how much I have time, right? Okay, good. Key issues are culture, business, legal, and IT considerations. Culture, we don't do patient engagement now, no matter what we say, we don't. We sometimes talk to people about shared decision making around drugs and procedures, but that's not what I'm talking about. The business models are key. We do not incentivize around patient engagement. We think we do, we don't, because we aren't tying it to enough things that are incentivized or training. Yet, funding is important to keep these kinds of methods going, but we pretty much have to give it away and beg people to use it. So those are key issues. You know, we can't really make the bar very high. And legal, if you don't have IRB coverage, even if you don't have PHI, personal health information, to have a provider send their parents to your website and to send something back that doesn't even have PHI on it to the doctor requires legal requirements, because at some point I have to have the name of the doctor and the patient for about 10 seconds to be able to get them to connect, and then all that's dumped. That took 10 months, and we just got it signed a couple weeks ago with Boston Children's. And then the IT considerations are all practices are different. We need to create a scalable model that doesn't require every practice to have an IT shop, because I can basically spoon feed it, but I can't get it in. You have to kind of pull in your data on your own. So we're creating different models. One is just send people to the public use website and have them email their visit guide to you. The other is to, you know, do the security faxing, and the other is the full EHR integration. And each of them require different levels. But for me to even figure out how to do it, how to scale that, is a whole development model. We're doing this all not for profit, obviously, but there still are costs. Like, the fax line has a phone line charge. How do I make sure that, you know, it's not 5 minutes of fax time between Boston and Portland, Oregon? Long-distance charges. How do you figure those things out? So those are all the things we're doing, and it's actually quite exciting. And I'm just going to go through these next few slides quickly. Mostly I wanted to alert people to what the issues are, and if anyone's interested in this, that we create a discussion group about it, because we ought to be, I think, up to the business of trying to solve this. Now that we have a business agreement, no one knew what one looked like. And so it's like, well, I think we did it right. Maybe we didn't. Maybe we didn't even need it. We're not really totally sure. But we do for the cultural shift, we have posters and engagement strategies for parents and kids. Those are little stickers up at the top. There are a lot of key, this is what it looks like, the cover of the branded site for PPOC. So we're giving each site a unique URL and a branding. So it looks like it's theirs. And the transition is what I call it, is disseminating and supporting, requires all of these pieces, educating and supporting, tailored implementation, maintaining updates to the tools. They're going to change Bright Futures again. Supporting alternative implementation models, as I said, we're looking at using this in home visiting and early Head Start, and just finished a project with the AAP on what that would look like. And we went right back to the cultural issues, which home visitors said, well, the providers don't really want to hear from us. You know, so that's the cultural issues across professions that are just as key. And the integration of the patient data. We do have a toolkit, and we're working on refining it in collaboration with our partners, which is also part of the work. So you can see that something comes out of research, and then you want to get it into the world, which is sort of a dream. You do a research project that results in something, and that's when you fall off a cliff. And so I've been basically doing this because I can't not do it, and luckily the Maternal Child Health Bureau is willing to let us spend a little bit of staff time, and AAPs kind of come through, but it's really like an Indiana Jones movie just to keep this thing going. And yet, if it died, it would be years and years of work sacrificed. So our future developments, obviously, are other versions, adolescent, kids with special needs, continue to scale. I will not stop ongoing research and evaluation. If people are interested in this field of patient engagement, want to partner, I'm looking for research partners. This is just a picture of the kiosk in a FQHC, where we're using it. And the mandate to translate, this is from the NIH, more present than ever within the research community is the belief that to optimize public health, we must not only understand how to create the best interventions, but how to best ensure that they are effectively delivered within clinical and community practice. And to me, we know enough. We have good tools, and we really need to pause and maybe not come up with a whole bunch of new stuff or a whole bunch of new data and really figure out how to get it used in practice. To me, that would really help change the health of the population. And I want to thank our many, many partners. I couldn't possibly list everyone, but this was on the original study, the core team, and then, of course, since then, we're just involving many more people. So if you want materials, planner.org on the bottom strip, this is part of the funding. We don't have a separate website for users, only it's the parent site. This is the site that parents go to. But at the bottom, there's things for providers, resources, there's video clips, there's implementation toolkits. And all of it is in a partnership model. In other words, we're not Johnson & Johnson or Gerber or anything. I mean, we just put an implementation toolkit together as best we can. It's living, and it's got to be in partnership. So if you're interested in these kinds of things and want to partner in helping to translate, that's the way it's going to happen. You know, and I think that, so I guess that's my way of saying it's not all as beautiful as it might be, but the information is there and it works. So there's just a little more that I put in here in case people wanted to see it.